Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The third O Tulsa Biennial opened last weekend at Living Arts of Tulsa, featuring many members of Tulsa's visual arts community and a curated exhibition showcasing the state of our city's creative community. This year, the biennial didn't stipulate a Tulsa thematic element to the work, but rather the organizers wanted to see a survey of the best that the visual community could produce in a wide range of genres. And certainly it did produce that. And my guest today is the guest curator for the exhibit, Kirsten Oles, an associate professor of art history at the University of Tulsa and director of arts management program there, guest curator for the O Tulsa Biennial 2017, which continues on display through August 25th at Living Arts of Tulsa. Kirsten Oles, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure to be the curator this year for O Tulsa, especially as the biennial is shifting its focus to celebrate the best in Tulsa art and artists without having a specific mandate for Tulsa-based subject matter themes.
And it's interesting, as you look at the show this year, some artists still kept to that theme, thematic element. Others didn't. But I think it's a useful shift because I think as I look at O Tulsa, one of the reasons it was, there were several reasons, but one was to bring all of the local arts community together, which it certainly has over the course of its three biennials, and also to sort of be a catalyst to sort of, you know, everybody kept showing together and, you know, hopefully that moves, you know, the artistic art making up, you know. What would you say as far as that, as far as the success of O Tulsa in doing that?
I think that you're exactly right. I think that it has done that. And I think that this was a perfect time to open it up. Living Arts, you know, in all of its time in Tulsa, has demonstrated its ability to really bring the community together and also be a space for artists and artwork that maybe aren't kind of conventional or don't fit into kind of easy boxes. And so I think it had achieved a critical mass with the previous O Tulsa biennials. And so this marked kind of a special opportunity to keep pushing forward, especially with kind of the shift in Living Arts itself as an organization. Of course, with the retirement of Steve Liggett, its, you know, kind of longtime director and champion, it seemed like this was the right time to keep moving forward.
Well, you know, there's a lot of efforts being made in the community to help the arts community, everything from you know, the University of Tulsa having loft space for its graduate art students in the Brady District. There are other loft space at the Arts and Humanities Council's building downtown in the Brady District. And you also have this arts fellowship where you're bringing in these artists as well as state artists for a two-year residency. How is that changing the art community, do you think?
Oh, it's been amazing. Even since I arrived in 2010, where the Brady District was really starting to boom, we've just seen those seeds blossom. And it's been a wonderful resource for the University of Tulsa, both the spaces that you mentioned, but also we've had a number of the Tulsa Artist Fellows do workshops at TU. And vice versa, and I saw a great number of student and alum contribution submissions to the O Tulsa Biennial that really kind of have shown that it's working. Right, the investment in the Brady District is working, and we've got this vibrant community of artists of all kinds, performing artists, writers, visual artists.
So, what was your philosophy as a curator for the biennial? Were you just looking for the best examples of arts in every genre that was submitted, or what exactly?
So my mandate was to kind of focus on getting a selection that celebrated the best in Tulsa art. And so first and foremost, I chose works that resonated with me in some way, whether conceptually, whether I saw that they were kind of pushing the use of materials or really thoughtful about the choice of medium, right? Whether they got me thinking, whether they made me feel something. And then I really looked at making sure that we had examples of all the media that were submitted, and really kind of thinking about trying to represent a range of styles as well, from, you know, abstract works to those in a more realist vein, installation works, observational works, et cetera.
Well, even though there was no Tulsa prompt or Tulsa thematic element in the show, I did notice that there was some artists that went with that again. Others very much did not.
Yeah. And so in kind of thinking about the show and the works that were selected, one of the things that I did, which was a departure from past O'Tulsa's, but I thought would help set up this year's show, was to kind of organize the selected artworks thematically. And rather than kind of grouping all of the themes where Tulsa was an inspiration together, we kind of see them across different themes. So one of the themes, for example, is sites. And we can think about sites in a literal way in terms of landscapes or scapes, if you will. Mm-hmm. So we see some great Tulsa landmarks, including like Joey Frisillo's plein air painting at Southwood Nursery,
right?
Or City Views, right? There's Anka Dodson's Play Ball,
right?
Beautiful watercolor.
Yeah, sort of looking down at downtown with the ballpark lit up at night.
Yeah,
in the background.
And so using the medium of watercolor there, I thought very effectively to capture light and shadows. Right. Then we also have works that take up the theme of memory, which is another one of the themes in the show, and some of the Tulsa inspired works fit really well with that idea of memory. So that Camille Suter suitcase with the painted image of the Desert Hills Motel on it, I thought that that was a great reminder of how objects can tell stories, right? How they can carry with them these memories that become touch points for us. Or one of the works that I had selected for a merit award, there was one merit award that was designated as kind of Tulsa-themed to honor the roots of the biennial.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Gabriel Rojas's Riverside, where he's recalling his memories of being a delivery boy for a bilingual newspaper in Tulsa. And so there's this idea of kind of traversing the city, both as kind of a child in these familiar routes, but then returning to it later, right, to look back on that and use the physical landscape of the city.
Now, this had another title when it was submitted, right?
Yeah, Flying a Kite Through Memories of Tulsa.
Yeah. And I had not seen the kite until you told me this alternate title, because Riverside is the one up in the gallery right now. But what's really interesting is it's a little street sign at 39th Street. It's sort of California. It strikes me as California stylish in a way, because it's sort of, it's little, you know, it's almost on the verge of abstraction, but you see all these images and just has that vibrancy that you see in contemporary California works. And there'll be a Route 66 sign. There's a little bit of river there. There's a little bit of river parks. There's a, you know, pedestrian bridge and all these sort of landmarks in Riverside neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that those become touch points for the memory,
mm-hmm.
right? And really that California style that you're referring to, I think a lot of that comes from the palette that's used and the quality of light that's achieved in that
it's
abstract
bright.
Style.
Yeah, bright,
yeah
bright,
it's
bright.
Really bright and vivid,
mm-hmm.
Which isn't often the way we think about memories, right? Oftentimes they're a little hazy, they're cloudy. And so I like that aspect of this piece and the way it's a palimpsest of sorts, right,
yeah.
Of this accumulated knowledge of the city by being in it.
Well, I tell you, that as I was looking through the gallery, I sort of jotted down a few that really struck my eye. And it's interesting that the first piece that I just really caught my eye, it turned out to be the best in the show. It was a portrait by Antonius Buey, and it's an incredible piece. And it catches your eye from across the gallery, and then as you get closer, it becomes even more spectacular because it's made out of hand-cut paper, and it's three-dimensional of just this portrait of just beautiful hand-cut paper.
Yeah, it's really remarkable piece. Buey is a Tulsa Artist Fellow, and the work called Noel is a portrait of a friend of the artist.
Yeah, there's a long quote as a part of the title. Yeah.
Absolutely. And it falls, this work, I thought, it really exemplified the theme of identities, which was another of the themes in the show, for the ways that it got at the duality of identity. And the quote touches on kind of femininities and masculinities and the way that people can embody both on a spectrum. And I thought that the work did that so well in the black paint and then the glitter that was used to create this reflective surface. Mm-hmm. And as you said, the way that this intricate, delicate cut paper is so large in size that it's really commanding and addresses and confronts the viewer.
Yeah, and the stare of the portrait is just
so piercing.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And also for the ways that I thought it was so inventive about thinking about medium and thinking about what is painting, what is drawing, what is sculpture, and the ways that it crossed those media boundaries.
Yeah, it was a very strong piece. And Buey had several pieces in the show, too, a couple pieces, I think.
Yeah, he had another one, Our House, that was a photograph, mm-hmm. right, of an individual kind of applying makeup. Mm-hmm. And so I saw that as being in maybe a little bit more of the Nan Golden style of kind of behind the scenes images of a particular community. Mm-hmm. And it also, I thought, showed the range of the artist's work.
Now, if I remember right, this portrait that won Best in Show was, mm-hmm. the quote sort of referred to this individual's being somewhat transgendered. He says, you know, I wear a beard. The quote referred to, I dress as, I'll wear a dress. I still wear a beard, and sort of this duality experience. And,
yeah.
and the person doing makeup looked like it was also somebody who was in
you're gender non-binary.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Right? And I loved the way particularly for the cut paper work, the way the medium also expressed that idea of not needing to choose.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Between, say, drawing and painting or sculpture.
My guest today is Kirsten Oles, a guest curator for O Tulsa. She's associate professor of art history and director of arts management at the University of Tulsa, who served as the guest curator for the O Tulsa Biennial 2017 at Living Arts of Tulsa, which continues on display through August 25th. If you haven't already been down to see it, to see some of the best art currently being created in Tulsa, and really some amazing work. There were two works by Beth Burgess, which these were very disturbing images, these sort of sculptural works of these feminine forms where it's sort of deconstructed. And one was called Josephine, the other was called Daria, and really kind of disturbing pieces, but really eye-catching and really arresting. And
yeah, Burgess created these elaborate but somewhat intimate installations of wire sculptures of women. And she had said in her statement with the submission that she was really interested in probing standards of beauty for women, but also in really thinking about age and the way that age in particular, it can be hard on women societally and also personally, and kind of the effects of that she's almost kind of borne witness to in these elaborate installations. And I really like the way that they get you to kind of peer into them and confront them. And then perhaps maybe as you're both a little bit repulsed, but also very much intrigued, to see maybe a little bit of your own vanity and also insecurities in them.
Now, as I mentioned earlier, as you mentioned earlier too, some artists did use the O Tulsa thematic element. You mentioned Camille Suter's Desert Hills Motel, which is really a nice little piece of conceptual art, you know, the Desert Hills Motel painted on the side of a suitcase, you know, sort of referring to Route 66, so traveling, and of course these motels that were such a part of that of the experience. Cynthia Marcoux had a beautiful, beautiful colored pencil piece, a multimedia piece that it referred to a diner. It's called Friday Night Special, and it featured photographs of this diner, menus from the diner, and then this colored pencil piece of the meal below. Really, really, I'm always amazed at colored pencil because just the amount of time that goes into creating a piece like that.
Oh, absolutely. And this work is almost trompe l'oeil or fool the eye in its realism, that it really does kind of recreate that place setting and the attendant memories with it in such exacting detail that it really was a triumph.
Yeah. And another piece that was just utterly completely different was Chandra Hill's Tulsa Table, which used found objects, a found table, and some old 1930s era Tulsa World and Tulsa Tribune newspapers to create this just wonderful piece. And it was really, when you actually look into the table, it's a glass top table with these papers cut up to just sort of showcase Tulsa. And it's everything, you know, from this very folksy commentary on what was going on in the oil patch to, you know, events, radio schedules, because there was no television, you know, at that time. So the radio schedules were like just written out like, you know, the TV section of the newspaper. You know, just all sorts of bric-a-brac of that era, and really gave you a wonderful little sort of time capsule piece.
It did. And the artist had said that she'd found those newspapers in the attic of her Brady Heights home and wanted to preserve the brittle newspapers in a way, and that this was a way to do it. And what I liked about that was we often think about photography or you know, color pencil, if you will, but particularly photography, as ways to record a snapshot in time. And so I loved the way that she used these newspapers as an index, right, as this time capsule of sorts, in a very kind of everyday mode, right? That idea of the dailiness of the newspaper and the dailiness of maybe sitting down and putting your coffee on the table as you read the newspaper. I love that kind of interplay between the form of the work and then the memories it conjured.
And I love the fact that the everything that she put in that paper sort of told a story of life in that particular, you know,
era.
Just a small slice, you know, what I would want to do, you know, how people spoke, and just the difference in how a newspaper looked in 1930s Tulsa as opposed to today. Now, as you might expect, given our political climate, there was a lot of political art that was in this, and probably the biggest piece of that was Patrick Gordon, P.S. Gordon, submitted a piece, and it's called "Oh Tulsa, What the Hell Did You Do It For?" And it's this, I guess it's a large painting of a Trump rally.
Yeah. And I, when that came into the gallery, I wasn't prepared for the size of the work, the kind of forcefulness of its address, and really its exacting detail. And the artist had said when he had submitted the work for consideration that he had been watching television, had picked up the phone and answered a phone and paused it, picked up the phone and answered a phone call, And then kind of when he returned to the television, the kind of an image like this was frozen on the screen, and that was the impetus for this painting. And even though it's obviously politically charged, I love all of the details that he inserted in the work that really get you looking. So there are the hats from the Women's March, the pink hats.
Yeah, that's right. Uh-huh.
There are Klansmen. kind of wearing the kind of recognizable hats.
There's the hats with the Make America Great Again.
There's the hats with the Make America Great Again. There's the use of Russian. There's the FBI agent.
Yeah.
And then the Monopoly man.
Yeah.
The Monopoly man figure.
Yeah, right. And then way off in the background, there's a guy holding a Drumpf sign. Yeah, it's a clever piece, and it's, again, political, but it's also got a sense of humor about it, too.
Absolutely. And I like the way that it also references the kind of ubiquity of news culture, right? The 24-hour news cycle. Mm-hmm. In a painting that clearly took a long time to realize, right? Sort of the antithesis of the fast-paced news cycle, right? The slow medium of painting.
Right, right. Across that gallery is a really eye-catching installation by
Slim Cook.
Yeah, Slim Cook. Set free the better angels of our nature. That's a quote by Abraham Lincoln, I think from the Civil War era, maybe the second inaugural address. Mm-hmm. And it is this beautiful angel figure that is emblazoned with love, liberty, justice on her arms. And yet she's chained to the ground by this sort of emerging from the ground, this prejudice, fear, and hate. It's really a strong piece, I thought.
Yeah, and I really love the way that the work acknowledges kind of Civil War era imagery, particularly around emancipation. So, you know, there's a number of kind of well-known sculptures of kind of freed men, right? Freed mm-hmm. slaves, but that still bear the shackles,
right?
Kind of showing the legacy of the past, even as they attempt to embrace the future. And so for this work, I think that, you know, Slim Cook led with the optimistic aspect of it. We can overcome these things that hold us back, these divisive elements of society, but they're still there, and we need to take note.
Yeah.
And so this work was actually part of, and Pat Gordon's, was part of the fourth theme of the show, change. All of the works that kind of embodied this theme seemed to ask something of us as viewers. They either asked us to interact, right, in carnival games,
right.
Like Crystal Tom Shanty's.
I was going to talk about this. It's goofy little games that she created. You know, there are carnival games, but one is one features. It's like a reverse. It's like a beanbag toss mm-hmm. with, if you're throwing money into this thing, it says the legislature misspelled, and it's like having to do with education, and then road work. It's like the trash cans that are the mm-hmm. orange trash cans.
The barriers.
Yeah, the barriers, where you throw a little car at it to hit the barriers. So it's just a cute piece, but also, you know, it sort of refers to what's going on in our state right now.
I thought so, and I thought that these works did two things. One was they showcased that idea of living arts and the Otulsa Biennial as freeing artists and allowing them to do something new or take a chance, because the artist is normally a narrative painter. And so
wow.
This was
yeah.
out of her wheelhouse. And the other thing that I liked about it was getting at some of the kind of issues that affect us, certainly the legislature, school funding, or frustration over construction, right, and road work. But it didn't do so in a didactic or a finger-wagging way. Instead, it was playful, it was interactive, but nonetheless, it still had us thinking about it later.
Right.
And maybe asking us, what were we going to do now?
And also in that section, right next to those, was a set of alarm clocks. These are like mm-hmm. vintage alarm clocks with the two ringers at the top, and it's called a Stay Woke. by Matthew Rule, and he's replaced the dials with these little paintings. One is like of bombs. One is of a very close up of a face. Another has a hand holding the earth. Another is a rainbow image, and it's like it's very political. It's like there's this whole new re-engagement and stay awake,
Yeah, yeah. And the alarm clocks were actually all set off to go off at different times.
Oh, really? Okay.
And thus to wake up the exhibition goers. And so I saw this piece as actually being related to what in the 60s and 70s we might call consciousness raising.
Mm-hmm.
And so saw this work in a continuation with those practices to get us thinking, and also as a cautionary tale. You know, don't fall asleep at the wheel, so to speak. Stay vigilant. If you're committed to social change or if there are issues that are important to you, then kind of keep doing it. Don't just rest on what you've done.
Yeah. Well, there's a whole range of work. We've talked about some of the there was also, you mentioned this fourth theme. Mark Wittig did this amazing oral history listening station where he took these oral histories, has photographs of the various people up on the wall, and invites you to basically to sit down and just listen to stories for a while.
I love that. And I love the way that Mark's work really attempts to shift the conversation around ability and disability. So his work focuses on learning disabilities or individuals mm-hmm. with disabilities and thinking about kind of shifting the conversation, again, not in a hectoring way, but in inviting you to get to know people, right? And in this interactive way, hearing their stories and thus kind of embracing difference rather than pushing to the margins those with differences.
Well, it's a really interesting show. There's a number of pieces that are using really interesting techniques. We mentioned the cut paper. There was another one that used, it was like four different processes. It was like cut paper, acrylic paint on,
Kathy
about
Duchel's
work? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the caregiver.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that you bring this up because this is our last theme, and it's actually the one that begins the show when you enter through the main entrance at Living Arts, and that's elements. And I was thinking about this theme in terms of the way that artists were kind of embracing either the elements of art making and really going back to explore the formal processes maybe that they had inherited and trying to push their limits in some ways or embrace chance processes. So we see that in like Chris Torkelson's paintings or Miles Karcher's kind of steel and the photograph of rust work.
Mm-hmm.
We see that in Kathy Duchel's work mm-hmm. where she's really innovative about kind of thinking about the process of kind of what makes a painting or what makes a drawing. And I love the idea that she's layering these pieces with such care, and that mirrors the subject matter of this idea of the caregiver. And that shifts some of the maybe traditional ways of thinking about figure painting. Another work in this kind of theme that I thought was really innovative in terms of how it was thinking about materials actually was Jean Ann Fauser's. Kind of, she had two pieces in the show that were felted.
Right.
And there was this exquisite dye-painted silk kimono with these felted rocks called A River Runs Through It.
Runs Through Me.
Runs Through Me, that's right.
Yeah.
Runs Through Me.
And it's got this river image right through the middle, and it's surrounded by these sort of felted rocks that cover the rest of the surface.
And I loved the way that work got at both the kind of the elements of art making, the elements of nature, and humans' role kind of in that, right? Yeah. It was great in bringing all of those themes together.
Well, there's a lot of great art to see at the O Tulsa Biennial 2017, which continues on display at Living Arts of Tulsa through August 25th. Kirsten, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Kirsten Knowles is an associate professor of art history at the University of Tulsa and guest curator for the O Tulsa Biennial 2017, currently on display at Living Arts of Tulsa, which continues through August 25th. For more information, visit livingarts.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced by Scott Gregory. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.